Hey, Bob Saget's here for you. Here we are. Thanks for listening to this one. This is a special one with my friend Jimmy Carr. He is very important. Just ask him. And he is in he's in London right now, or outside of it. I don't know where. He is a wonderful man. We got to meet each other at the Montreal Comedy Festival years back and hit it off incredibly. At least that's what I thought. He just said hi. But I really adore his sense of humor. He's incredibly bright. He hosts so many television shows and is a beloved comedian because he's got a really great heart and a great mind. And he's complex, and I enjoy that quite a bit. So letting you know also, there are days where I call you guys, and there's a phone number up in the thing, up in the top there. So you'll want to be calling that number, leaving a message, and I might call you. I'll tell you on Twitter or Instagram stories when I will be calling you guys and talk to you people and see how you're doing out there all over the world. Feel free to leave a message. I would love to call you back, and I hope you're not asleep if you're in somewhere that's 19 hours ahead of me. I don't know if that would make sense. 19 would be fine. But and do what you do. You rate, review, you subscribe. You subscribe to this podcast and follow it is what they tell me to say. I'm a company man. I do it sometimes. I'll do commercials. I'll do what you need to do your podcast. I'm doing this because I want to, because I just want to communicate with you guys and hopefully bring a smile to your day. I'm not able to go out and perform. I do it in front of my house sometimes. I sit on a rainbird and right with my butt and just spin around. But otherwise, nobody sees it. So it's really just for me and the small sparrow that turns its head wondering, why is he doing that? So with no further ado, because that was meaningless, Jimmy Carr.
How's the new abnormal, my friend? How are you enjoying things?
It's insane. I'm home. I don't mind it. I don't mind being home. You have the nice background behind you. I have a beautiful home, but I've chosen to not show it. This is what it looks like. I live in a basement, like a lonely man.
Well, the issue with being, I mean, we have, you know, lovely homes, beautiful families to be with. The issue really is we also have a desperate, childlike need for attention that is, I mean, our poor families. Think for a second, not stand-up comedians. They're not the victims in any way. The families of stand-up comedians.
You're right.
My God, they've had to put up with some bullshit the last couple of weeks.
You're absolutely correct. They put up with more than the people right on the front line, the workers, the doctors, the nurses. I think the families of comedians have it.
For the first 4 weeks, genuinely, about 8 o'clock, because I was on tour when this happened. Like, it came down, like the shutters came down. I was up in Scotland, kind of arrived home, watched the news for 48 hours, and then 8 o'clock every night, like clockwork, I'd be kind of throwing out some zingers.
Yeah.
In the kitchen to whoever was there.
Right. And mine is always, wait, honey, and it's just my wife and I here. My kids are back east in the States, in New York, and another's out in the West Coast.
I hear New York's going great.
It's actually better. It's actually less...
than it was in the 70s? What are we judging against?
No, that it was two months ago. Oh, it's not... We don't have the... I don't know if you've heard, but we're not in great shape.
No, it does seem... I mean, it's that weird thing as well, where you kind of look around the world and see how different places are... See how this thing is developing and different people are coping. It seems pretty bad... Everywhere. The only good thing I could say about COVID-19 is FOMO is gone. There used to always be a thing of like, oh, it's a fear of missing out. Maybe something fun's happening over there. Maybe there's a better show. Maybe there's a bigger theater to play. There's nothing. There's right. Nothing going on, which is kind of, it shows your life for what it is. There's no running away from it now. You have to kind of face up to your life. This is where you live. This is who you live with.
And this is who you want to connect with. And I'm finding myself, I don't know about you, because I know that you're a bit of a loner as much as an extrovert. I'm the same kind of way. I like to be alone. I like to get my work done. But I also, pre-COVID, but our nature is to be an extrovert because we have to. I mean, I started doing this podcast before quarantine. I started doing it before the disease was heavily in the news outside of China. And I wanted to help people because I was out doing stand-up, doing I have an affinity toward man love for you because we have a similar sense of humor, which is to say something that means something, and yet it can be the most irreverent possible thing you could say. But your creation, what's so brilliant about you that I love, which I'm sorry, I know you love hearing people say they love you. But everybody, yes. Of course, but it's the way you weave into something that you tell them. I do the same thing now, especially now that this is not going to be PC. I can't say this anymore, not in this day and age. Then you say it, and then it's about, 30 seconds more to a minute of digging out of it. And explaining, so there's no...
Well, I think it is that thing where stand-up is kind of last... It feels, ironically, given we're talking about being, not very politically correct, it feels like such a safe space. It feels like everyone's here, they know why they're here, we can say these things, and it feels like it's a safe space to kind of just mess around and explore.
It is one of the... Is that a dog or is your penis barking?
We butcher dogs next door. You know how that is.
Oh, you butcher dogs. It's great. And you know, mankind with the animal
kingdom. You can't beat Wuhan province. You got to join them.
That's
fair. So we got a dog just got back from the vet, so he's complaining. He's fine. It's weird. That podcast thing is like the idea of chatting and having like a conversation, even overhearing a conversation, which I always think is what a podcast is like. It's at its best, it's eavesdropping. And the idea that you kind of go, there's none of that going on in life at the moment. People are doing their work from home. And you go, oh, you realize the reason you work is for the social aspect. You like connecting to other people.
There's huge truth in that. In fact, let me just tell the audience right now who know you. And then Jimmy Carr is right there. And he is one of my favorite comedians on earth, and he is of course world renowned. He has 19 shows all the time in the UK. He is an amazing stand-up, and I was lucky enough to meet you in Montreal at the comedy festival where we took a liking to each other, and you started pranking me right away to get me into an uncomfortable, inappropriate situation.
I mean, we the Montreal, of course, happening right now. So the other thing we're missing out on is summer camp for comedians, which is Montreal. And everyone kind of goes up to this comedy festival. I'd recommend it. People are listening to this and they haven't ever been, and they go, well, we want to go and sit on a beach for a couple of weeks in the summer, or we want to go on a sailboat. Go to Montreal to the comedy festival because it's beautiful up there. The food is incredible because it's how could I describe it? It's French food, American portions. Right?
That's true. Montreal.
And it's fabulous. You get to go to shows every night and just kind of tool around during the day. And if you like comedy, if your thing is comedians, hang out at the hotel and they're just around.
But social distancing is not something they can do right now, right? At that festival?
I mean, they cancel that. They canceled Toronto in September. It feels like 2020 is pretty much written off. I mean,
that's what I'm trying to do with it right now. I mean, it's supposed to be perfect vision 2020, but it seems like we're all blind. Blind as a bat.
Yeah, it does seem, bats and pangolins. If you've got a pangolin pun,
I didn't even know what that was. I swear to God, I thought they meant penguins. I did not realize that is the supreme.
It's as well, the bats, I think people were eating, but the pangolins are in Chinese medicine.
They're doctors?
They're doctors. They're doctors. A pangolin and bat sandwich is what started this madness. I don't know. I mean, it does seem like it's a weird thing where everyone's become quite the expert in COVID-19 now, but we're waiting around for something to happen. I don't know what moves the dial. I have a feeling it won't be a vaccine in the autumn. I got a feeling what it'll be is the treatment protocol will change. One of those drugs that they're developing for, cystic fibrosis or asthma will... stop the lungs from getting so inflamed, and people will just be able to cope with it better, and you won't have to go on a ventilator. I think once people aren't scared of it anymore, things will get back to normal. But at the moment, who would want to roll the dice?
And there's a big argument here. Do you have that in the UK of I'm not wearing a mask? There are people angry that they have to wear one. It takes away their human rights.
I mean, fuck those people.
Yeah.
Right? And it feels like the mask is not particularly, I don't think anyone, you know, it doesn't seem terribly dangerous for people that don't have pre-existing conditions. But the idea that you would just be careless with someone else's life just seems crazy. Like, what's the downside of wearing a mask?
Well, some people don't like it, especially if they are the kind of person that is a predator. Like a predator.
That's a huge advantage if you're a predator to have a mask on.
No, for you, but for the other person, it gives no access.
No, yeah, okay.
So there are a lot of people wouldn't be in jail right now, the way things are going. If their victims had, see, that's the kind of humor that I'm talking about that is hurtful.
It does feel kind of amazing that every movie we've ever seen about the end of the world, everything that's about or the end of times and there's a pandemic or whatever, it's all about rioting in the streets and it's all about people, you know, scrambling to get food. People have been pretty good. People have been all right.
You know, we here in the U.S. have had a lot of, it's such a huge issue. And you haven't had that same problem. You've supported us. Your protests have supported racism that exists all around the world.
Well, our kind of thing on the, I mean, we've had quite a lot of Black Lives Matter protests here, and they've been incredible and very, very responsibly done, actually. People, you know, socially distance at them, and there's always a couple of nutters that turn up for a fight. That's always our issue, is that they're kind of that weird right wing kind of turns up and wants a fight. But that happening at the same time as well, I mean, if any good has come out of COVID-19, it's that the focus, everyone was kind of at home, and it suddenly got focused that it feels like it didn't get that focus before. I mean, it didn't.
We're doing.
It has happened before, and the Black Lives Matter movement isn't a new thing. But it feels like there's a head of steam now that things might change. That you might dare to think things will change. It's that thing though where you go anything like civil rights or feminism, you go it's not over. It's a continuum, and everything's moving in the right direction. I really like that Steven Pinker book. I keep on rereading it, Enlightenment Now, that says...
Would you read it? Do you have time to read it to me right now?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you the highlights. Basically says, we live in the best world there has ever been. By every metric you could look at, the world is better now than it was. It's not to say it doesn't need improving. It's not to say things don't need changing drastically and some things need changing really quickly. But this is the best it's ever been, and it's getting better. And sometimes you look at the news and you just think the world's on fire. But
the world is feeding all of it, and they need ratings, and they have advertisers, and that's what people are watching is all of the news channels. We have here an issue that, you know, we had slavery here. Yours was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. I don't know did you have slaves in? I mean, I've been watching Outlander, trying to get my history.
Really, Britain is, so guilty in this because we really not started, the Portuguese started the slave trade. The Portuguese were the first that went to Africa and brought people back as slaves. But then the British, about 100 years later, started they were basically bring down things to sell to the West Africans. They would pick up slaves, go to the Caribbean, drop them off, and then bring back sugar and tobacco and rum. And so that kind of golden triangle was really started by the British. And that's where modern banking started. That's where it's also, when you think about everything that we have now, when you think about how unfair the world is, that's because of slavery. Because the Industrial Revolution was the way that they... slavery was the funding for the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. Biblically, the Jewish people were slaves forever, and they haven't forgotten it. I mean, they're more OCD than anyone else, and they've got...
It's an interesting thing of like what you think might happen in America, because for me, the idea that at some point, America goes, okay, reparations. We need to pay some reparations to these people.
It's starting to happen. That's what I was going to say before was, what's the greatness, and I just talked to Whoopi Goldberg about this, which of course gives it full credibility. But the truth of it is, while we can't really turn to our government because we're a bit botched here with all the dissension and all the two different sides, major different sides and fundamentalists, but the needle's getting moved. You know, a giant boulder is being pushed up a mountain, and in 1 year, in 2020, because of this, what you were talking about, the powder keg that is everyone staying at home, quarantine.
It feels like we pressed pause, and then this massively important issue that's always been, it's always been important, but it's never been urgent.
Exactly.
It's always like, oh yeah, no, that's a huge thing we need to deal with, but we're distracted by this other thing right now. And it feels like you've got this thing now, and it feels to me like the thing to do would be education, because movement through the social hierarchy, education's all we've got. Like, education seems to be the only thing that makes a difference. And you go, well, just a free college education for every African American doesn't seem, for the richest economy in the world, seems affordable.
And then people are yelling, that's socialism. You can't do that. But that, because you need to give it to everyone. And then financial institutions like our universities. The main thing is that we hit reset and that people are not only educated, but new things are implemented. And I'll tell you, it's just the beginning, you know, of the toe in the bathtub, because all I speak is in metaphors. That way I don't get in trouble. Cause it's like, you know, threading the needle. But what's happening is there is change. There is actual change that has come from the Black Lives Matter movement, period.
It's really interesting that, of like, what will come of this, like having like really clear, I mean, listen, this is two old white men discussing what might happen.
Did you have to say old? I mean, you're not old.
I mean, look at us. What else are we going to say?
Don't I look good for a guy who's 90?
Yeah, on this camera, yeah.
From the waist down, I'm 13.
Adorable. adorable. That's another podcast entirely.
It is. It has its own podcast. My penis is starting a podcast. It's called a peencast.
How much of this do you think is caused by the, or how much of the trouble in the world do you think is caused by social media? By, you know, that idea
doesn't help.
Well, it's that idea that people say, oh, it's an echo chamber, but it isn't. It's an amplifier. If you're a little bit on the left, you go way to the left. If you're a little bit on the right, you're suddenly alt-right. And it seems like there's this incredible communication tool and no one is talking. And actually, people are just in their trenches firing at each other. There's no... The best question I got asked...
That is very prolific, what you just said. I'm going to broadcast that.
Why not?
I'm going to chisel it in stone.
Here's my favorite question at the moment, of all the questions in the world. What's the last heartfelt belief you changed your mind about?
I think it's right now. I think it's happened right now. I think
you're falling in love.
I'm in love with you, and I always have been, and I love the haircut. There's a lot about you. I love the color scheme. I knew you were going to have a blue shirt on because I know you somewhat. Not well, but well enough to know. But the jacket, the camel, beautifully tapered jacket. Do you have pants on?
No.
Oh, that's so great.
No, but I like to have freedom to masturbate at any moment.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. That's why your camera was... Optionality. Say again, I'm sorry, Jimmy.
It's all about optionality. You want to have, you know, you want to know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. That's why you don't show anything below camera frame, because it's probably like a crystal cavern in there.
For the best. This is free. That costs you extra. it is a really interesting time where you go, look, you know, there's an old Chinese proverb, isn't there? We're cursed to live in interesting times. But you go, there could be a massive change about to happen. And that feels, you know, legit exciting to be kind of around to witness that. And it's, you know... Things are moving in the right direction. I always say, look, there's going to be gay marriage in Saudi Arabia, but not anytime soon, but someday, right?
Right.
You go, that idea that there's a William Gibson quote, the future is here, but it's not evenly distributed. You know the way when you look around the world at how they're reacting to COVID, you kind of go, oh, they seem like they have it together. Oh, that state, they're idiots. That you look at different people reacting to this and go, well, this is, and it really kind of, you see it in stark contrast, like where there's progress and where there hasn't been progress.
Yes. Within 500 miles of each other here in the United States. I mean, you could see people in, okay, we're at stage two, 1,020-year-olds in a pool in Florida. And then you see clips of that, I'm sure, in Europe and go, what? Are they crazy? And no one's got a mask and they're all playing chicken in the pool with each other on their shoulders and they come down with it. And people,
although there's the other, there's, you know, the flip side of that is there's a lot of people that say, well, we can't shut down forever because we're going to go for not just a depression. This isn't going to be like 2008 and the aftermath of the financial crash. This is going to be a full on depression after this. We're going to, you know, which means, I mean, technically it just means the economy gets smaller, I think 3 quarters in a row, but it's going to be devastating. And that poverty kills people. It just kills people.
They never come back from it. And my dad went through it when he was a kid with the Great Depression.
How old are you?
Well, my dad would have been 100. But I'm 64, which is...
Wow. Okay. So he was around in the Dust Bowl.
He saw horse and buggies in front of his house when he was a kid, just when the car was coming out, which... still doesn't track. I don't understand how he could tell me that, but it must be true.
I kind of love that, though, the idea that you go, that kind of progress. And in the next 50 years, what's to say that kind of progress won't happen again? And if it's social progress, you know, what we're talking about, if Black Lives Matter really becomes the start of something that changes the way our society works and it becomes just a little bit fairer, be kind of amazing, wouldn't it? Be an amazing.
It would be, but why didn't we say something sooner? I have a guilt gene in me because I don't have a racist bone because I had racial profiling when I was a kid, being Jewish in Norfolk, Virginia, you know, where the colonies first came. And I don't know. I've never, and you're not that way. I mean, we're just people and we laugh at the atrocities. Because we can't handle it. I mean, I have two options, sit there and cry and sit there and feel the pain so deeply, or make a snarky comment because that's my way of letting the air out.
I always thought that the comedy is a really kind of a sign that there's a catharsis happening. And so I think that's why it's very difficult to joke around this issue because you kind of go, there's no justice here. Nothing's been settled yet. So it feels like this area is kind of it's not ripe for it, you know, because it feels like there's no justice.
We haven't had it yet fully for people that have been killed. Breonna Taylor is another person besides George Floyd, and it's horrific. People need to be held accountable, and that's what's happening in that. Horribleness that it takes. Why does that have to happen to move the needle? You know, why is Martin Luther King dead? You know, one of the most beautiful people we could even imagine on the earth. So,
yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's a pretty horrendous state the world is in. It's interesting that during this pandemic, actually, this you know, thing has happened to everyone. But, and again, you know, we've pushed pause on the world. No one's out there doing what they're normally doing. There's no distractions. And you focus on what's actually important. And the world feels like it's focusing on the important. So let's try. I'm a very glass half full person. I try and be as kind of positive as
me
I can.
Too.
Maybe this is what the world needed. You know, there's all the environmentalists are certainly sort of going, well, hey, there's swans back in Venice. Fabulous. It shows you what happens when we don't fly around somewhere.
Did you hear about the swans? So they drank the water and died. So I didn't know if you heard that.
That seems about right.
But they're eating them. So, because that's what we do with endangered species.
Well, that's how they get endangered. Their problem is they're too delicious.
Maybe I wish I was endangered.
You know the story on, you were talking about horse and buggies, and it makes me think of the story about New York at the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. You know why there's steps up to buildings in New York. That like there's
was it,
steps up.
Was it,
so there's the basement below, and there's always steps up to the front door.
It was either water level or the trenches that were for the horse and buggies, and they had to.
It was horse shit. There was so much shit in the streets from the horse and buggies. It was so loud because it was cobbled streets and metal kind of casings on the wheels. It was so loud in New York. There was so much horse shit. If a horse died, they had to cut the horse up in the street, wait for it to atrophy, and then take it away. It was disgusting. And they kept on having meetings saying, we need to do something about the horse shit problem. We need to do something and cut up these horses. And we need to have less horses, tax on horses, do something. And ultimately, they never solved the problem. The car came along. The technology came along and solved the problem for them.
So just, maybe right at this moment where things look so dire, we suddenly there will be, if I may, flying horses. And I think if Pegasus is the model for the future.
Well, I think something comes along, you know, in these kind of moments, something comes along. I don't quite know who comes along or what comes along.
Right.
You know, you look to an individual. I think there's something really wonderful about the Black Lives Matter movement, where it seems to be a mass movement, and it doesn't seem to be about someone being, you know, one person. It seems to be about a mass of people saying, well, we want justice. It seems like really, that seems incredibly kind of smart and irresistible to change.
Well, the change is, without the change, we will not survive, because we can't allow other humans to suffer all over the world. I mean, and it's everyone's responsibility. And people argue with that. You know, well, Great Britain went through this. The United States goes through this. But we're not the world's police force. We're not the world's leader. Yes, you are. If you are a democracy and you are a powerful country, there's a responsibility that comes with that. It's like saying, I'm not going to be the patriarch of the family. I'm sorry you are. And we could use a father or a mother of our country here that would unify more. Or if only I call him he, could unify more, if that was a possibility. But that's not what we have. Has turned this political.
Do you think that... Do you think he's going to get in again? Do you think there's going to be a change?
When you say get in again, do you mean to like Stormy Daniels, or do you mean to...
Are the Russians going to go for two elections in a row?
That's the question, is can they? And that would be the fear maybe that he would have if they can't somehow do that. I mean, why would he be so against, you know, voting by mail?
It does seem that, you know, of all the most politicians going for their second term in the White House, well, either they get in or they don't, and they go and they open, they write a book and they open a congressional library. A congressional library doesn't seem right for him. It's more likely to be a congressional, I don't know, titty bar and golf store, something like that.
I don't think it would be. Yeah, he'd probably buy golf clubs, meaning the not is, clubs. I think he would have a network. I think he would do a more of a political, his own network, his own.
Is he going to go to jail?
There's a chance of that. I don't think as president you're allowed to sell beans and sponsor beans, because the guy that owns the bean company is supporting you and giving you a big check. You don't put them on your desk in the Oval Office. I never thought I'd see that.
But can you pardon yourself as you leave? Is that I'm not kind of
only if he flatulates.
It's like as you leave the building, can you go and I'm pardoned for everything?
I think he would do that immediately, but I think he would. I don't know. You know, this is what we do. We talk about it. We talk about it a lot. What's going to happen? Rather than what we all need to do is be in the moment and move things forward, but. You know, we got a big election coming up, a huge, maybe one of the biggest this country's ever had. And that isn't true, because look at the history. We're newbies,
Yeah, I mean, you look at that election. I kind of think, I'm not quite sure what happens, because his people are very good at electioneering. They're very good at looking at, oh, where do we need to move the dial? Where do we need to be in order to win? I mean, Hillary won the popular vote, but didn't get the White House. And you go, well, that's to do with their expertise in saying what's important to win and what's not important.
And you know, what so states were not off, covered. Sorry.
Yeah, when you write off Los Angeles and write off New York and you go, well, we'll just focus on the bit that matters in order for us to get elected. And you kind of go, I worry that if he thinks we're not going to win, we've done the polling, he just goes, yeah, we're going to push. It's the first time, I think, in American history, well, certainly that I can remember, where there's a push, where he could just go, we're going to have an election. I'll leave it a year.
I think he would say, if he does not win, that it's rigged, that it was fixed, and probably would say that the Democrats used Russia. I don't understand a lot of the two. I love the two-party system, the idea of it, the meaning of it, but if you don't have a discourse, it's meaningless. It's just what you were saying about, sending a tweet and attacking. It's launching barbs at each other. No one's really trying to solve the problem.
Here's my thing on the two-party system. I don't agree with anyone on everything.
Right.
So it's that thing of going, well, saying I support this party or I support that party. Well, I don't agree with anyone. It feels, political parties to me feel a bit like, you know, you go to a Chinese restaurant and you don't know anything about Chinese food, you order from the set menu because you don't know. But when you know a little bit about Chinese food, you pick the things that you like. So everyone has their personal politics now, their things that they enjoy. I just feel like it's weird. We've got more of a say in America's Got Talent than we have in like, you can vote on issues on your phone. And it used to be that we had to have representatives because you couldn't possibly get the communication wasn't there. You couldn't get everyone to write a letter and say what they think about this particular issue. But you could now. You could have a politics app on your phone, and it doesn't have to be just senators and congressmen. Everyone could vote.
The problem is the problem's bots. The problem is many people, I mean, right now in some of the elections, Donald Trump has been saying that they're sending ballots to dogs and deceased people. And
bullshit.
I think it's hilarious. Actually, Stephen Colbert did a funny thing about dogs voting and how they're rigging the election.
Here's the other thing I like about politics. I like the Australians. You familiar with the Australians?
Yeah.
They're sort of they're like drunk British people. They're wonderful. Here's what they do. They say, oh, you want to be a member of this society? You got to vote. So it's mandatory over there. There's big fines if you don't vote. Once every 5 years, you have to trudge down to a local elementary school and put a tick in a box. Great. I love that. I love the idea that you would go, everyone, you're all part of this society. You've got to get involved. You've got to be part of it. I like that.
That's part of the census here in the U.S., but there's no law. They say it's illegal, but they're not arresting. You know what? Let's hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Believe it or not, there's a commercial. But just wonderful things. Why don't you throw to it? You're the supreme television host.
What are we? We're gonna take a short break now. Maybe you wanted to. What are we advertising? Do we know?
It's probably something that trims your ball hair, something.
You mean my maid? There's an advert for my maid.
It's for your maid. Maid's very fashionable to use right now. That's a proper word. It's a manscaping thing, or it could be about a mattress that's a great mattress, or it could be about how you get stamps through the mail, you know, through your computer. There's all kinds of stuff.
Wow. Okay. So you would shave your balls so that you're ready for Congress. You would then have sex on that beautiful mattress, and the sex would be so good, it would be worth writing home about. You would need a stamp. This is perfect. We could tie it all together.
Now, you are the improv king. You just did everything perfectly. The break was great, and we're back. When did you start being a wordsmith? When did you start? Who were your influences? Was it? I know you've been asked this in other stuff.
Actually, it was very American. I mean, I'm a UK-based comedian, and I slightly go, I'm very old-fashioned in a way. I tell jokes, and it's very binary jokes. I like the fact that it's as a tiny bit of communication. It either works or it doesn't. You laugh or you don't laugh. And in front of an audience, you're saying, there's no safety net. I'm going to make it work. So I loved Emo Phillips and I loved Stephen Wright. And I still,
it's fascinating.
I'm amazed by jokes. I love the fact that every joke is the same. Every joke is two stories. And in the first story, you're forced to make an assumption that turns out to be erroneous in the second part of the story or punchline. It's the sudden revelation of a previously concealed fact. And I can't tell you how important I think they are. I literally think jokes have made our society. I can make a case for this. I mean, it sounds crazy, but I think the reason we've been able to specialize as humans is because of jokes. If you think about silverback gorillas, right? Huge.
By the way, I just want to say that's all I think about.
Yeah, I mean, they're magnificent creatures. They get to groups of about 50 or 60, and then that's it. Because they groom each other. That's how they know they're members of the same group. They groom each other, and you go and see them in Rwanda. It's unbelievable. They groom each other, get to about groups of 50, and then, you know, ape number 60 goes, I don't really know that guy. I don't really, who's he? Dave? I don't like him. And they form a new group. Humans are able to have a higher group number. We're able to have 150 people in the group. There's a thing, you might have seen it when you read about social media, often comes up called the Dunbar number. I met the guy, scientist. So it's 150 people. You're able to know 150 people. So the idea is we remote tickle with laughter. We're able to remote groom with laughter. And it's a way of kind of, you laugh along with other people. That laughter is incredibly important as a social glue, and that group comes together. And because you can have the larger group, you can specialize, and hey presto, society.
I could not agree more. The collective experience that people are all sharing together when they're all laughing together, and when you get to be part of it, when you're on that stage, and you've been running some amazing clips from your specials on Instagram that I've been just devouring, that are wonderful. Thanks. But they're wonderful, and I kind of work in the similar way. It's funny that the two comedians that you mentioned, Stephen Wright and Emo Phillips, Stephen was conceptual, would say something and then turn it on its side. And Emo had I worked with both of them. I knew them. Stephen's a friend. Emo, one time I worked with him, he was opening for me in Texas. And instead of doing, he would do jokes. He had a mic stand, but while he did it, he was trying to do like an Andy Kaufman thing, and he clipped his toenails on stage. And I'm like, the audience don't really want to see feet or toenail clipping, but it was not the Emo that you would go, wow, that was so conceptual.
I like the thought though. I mean, yeah. You know, going for an Andy Kaufman thing, that'll do. That'll be great.
I know.
Because even a swing and a miss, you go, well, you're doing something interesting. And he was so interesting linguistically for me. The idea that this guy was just like, they're almost like the spelling of these things, the idea that they are like magic spells, the idea that these words, you could say them in any order. And I like to think of myself as a drug dealer.
I think of you that way.
But the drug I'm dealing in is in the endorphins. You already have the endorphins on you in the audience. You just need me to kind of unlock them.
Yes.
People turn up and go. And the thing that's interesting is when you watch a comedy audience arrive, and it's been a while now, and I miss it so much. But you see them arrive, and they're so primed to laugh. They know. I think you get the benefit from a comedy ticket the day you buy it. It's an intention. You buy the ticket, you go, I'm going
to
go.
It's not unlike It's not unlike going to a music event of someone that you just adore. And it's the same type of thing. I mean, I used to pay for many comedians, and now I would just go where they are if I want to see them. Working out at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles or wherever. But there are a few people that are filling giant stadiums right now besides, you know, Dave Chappelle and Kevin Hart and Joe Rogan, and they had to cancel dates. You just canceled a large sting just the other day. You were doing outdoor picnic things.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of things are kind of coming up, and then people are trying to kind of sort out what could be the next thing. And there's some promoters that are trying to put stuff together, I think very bravely, trying to go, right, we're going to do drive-in shows, or we're going to do picnic shows, or we're going to do something. and some of them aren't working out. And you, I really feel for those guys because our industry is huge. And there's so many people working in it that are trying to go, well, how do we get back sooner? How do we get back so we don't just go bust, so we have something to go back to? It's interesting, actually, how big comedy's got the last couple of years. How I think my theory is we get up in the morning and we look at our phone, we check the news, and then we get in our cars and we look at the sat nav, and then we get to work and we look at our computer screens, and then we get home and we watch Netflix on another screen. We're screen, 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 screen. And then you want to go out and have a human experience. And we're individuals that want to desperately be part of a tribe. So we're kind of going, well, where can I be in a tribe? You go to a music show or a comedy show, you're in a tribe, all kind of doing something together, and it's incredibly freeing. That's where we belong.
And that's how the curve got busted in many places, because people wanted to party. They wanted to go out and be, you know, drunk and disorderly and have fun. So as much as I judge it, because I don't want the virus to continue and be spread, I understand it. I would love to howl at the moon and go out and have a good time.
It is that thing, though, where I go, you know, the poverty that's being caused by shutting down everything. And then the mental health is, you know, people are starting to talk about it now. There was a big campaign in the UK maybe 2 years ago, and they said, oh, 1 in 4 people have suffered a serious mental health problem in their life. 1 in 4. Anxiety or depression in a big way. It's now 100% of people. I don't know.
They say it's always been 100%. It depends on how open the choke is on it, how big the whatever you call it. What is that called? That's right before you masturbate, I believe. But it's how the aperture of how much mental illness, what your brain can hold on to, what you can go through. Yeah. This is unspeakable for so many people. I mean, this podcast.
But you know what I mean? Like, we have it pretty easy. We're, you know, we can grumble about, oh, I love doing live shows, or I love my job, and now I can't do my job. But we're not worried about food on the table.
And we have a homeless population about to hit, right now hitting the streets in the U.S. That is unfathomable. It is.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's just awful. And you kind of go, I don't know what's going to happen after this, because you go, well, what's charity going to look like? What's altruism going to look like the next 5 years? Because you go, who needs help? Everyone. You know, I don't know if anyone's going to be buying tickets to shows the next couple of years, because there'll be a huge proportion of people that just go, well, I need to save a bit more, because what if this happens again? It slightly changes your perspective on, you know, hey, everything's going fine. Like, you talk about rainy days. 2020 has been a long rainy day.
Yeah, everybody's drawing from their nest egg, from their savings to be able to pay their, if they can, pay their mortgage or their rent, depending on. And for us, I mean, it sends me out going, okay, we cut the ticket price in half, you know, because I'm fortunate, have been. I'll do it. I want to go there. And if they can afford it, I know you wouldn't cut the ticket price in half, but maybe I won't do it. Yeah. I mean, what's the point in that?
I'll make the show funnier. I, you know, my thing is all, you know, this thing is, it makes you, you know, every cloud, I guess, has a silver lining. And for me, this shutdown makes me realize how much I love my job. I've been doing this about 20 years.
Right.
And there's a part of you that, like, it doesn't matter how good it is. You're a bit like, oh, okay, all right, it's another, oh, where are we flying to? What are we doing? Another show. And now you kind of go, oh, yeah, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's such a privilege to be able to do this job.
I did not know how much I personally needed to do it. And then it makes you, like you're saying, reevaluate, why do I love it? Why am I doing it? And the reason is I'm made, this is my DNA. And I must do it because this exchange is one of the most beautiful things that happens for a human being. And it happens with musicians. It happens with anyone in a public forum, public speakers. But with comedy, what you do so brilliantly is you take one of the worst, most painful moments. And I do it also. And it hasn't always served me. There was a backlash because I was, you know, America's Dad and things like that on a sitcom and on a video show that Jeremy Beadle hosted in the UK, but yeah. I hosted it here.
What was the backlash? What did you get?
The backlash was that I was so irreverent, that I went so R-rated, just in you know, how many dick jokes can one man tell? I say infinity. But I
like that thing of going, I think with comedy, like the authenticity of comedy, of going, well, you can't tell a joke unless you think it's funny. And some people like mild comedy and some people like the rough stuff. I think you could draw a really good analogy with your sense of humor and your sexuality and what food you like. You know, some people like spicy. Some people like dark comedy. Some people like rough sex. It's like...
And some people like everything very safe and not anything edgy or offensive and no bad language.
Missionary position, they like beige food and they like very safe, observational, mainstream sitcom. Great. That's available.
And it's valid. It's a valid want.
I think the times when there tends to be a problem is when someone's expectation is mild America's dad, and then you go, no, I'm a super funny, edgy guy. I was just playing a role there. This is really me. And there's an expectation thing where, but I mean, they kind of should have, you've been doing this long enough, they should have known. You're a nasty man.
And I mean well. That's the other thing. That's another thing I love about you.
I think people like the meaning of a joke, the communication of what a joke is saying. The joke is never about what the joke is about. The joke is just, it's about, all jokes say the same thing. They say, look, I like you and I want you to like me. That's all we're saying. Yeah. It's just, we're having a laugh. We're having a laugh here. No one's getting hurt. This is fine.
Well, that's one of the problems that we have in our world right now. And we've got all these world leaders of different countries that are really hated by half or more of the population. And not just here in the U.S., it's all over the world. They're running rampant. Dictators. I always say dictators are my least favorite potato chip. You know, because they...
Keep saying it till it gets a laugh. Stick with it.
One side of your face, you were either having a stroke or are you kind of... Sometimes that's enough for me.
It's one of the side effects. That thing of...
Saying they want to be loved. I'm saying Donald Trump wants to be loved. He does. He's trying to do, you know, that kind of humor, those barbs, that roast type humor. He's trying to be like he got roasted once on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And so he wants to be the guy throwing the zingers. And
actually, that roast on Comedy Central was when he announced for the first time, I think, that he wanted to be president.
Yeah.
And that's the one example I can think of a joke going too far. Maybe the only time in human history we go, whoa, 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 whoa. It's funny when you said it, but don't do it.
It's weird that we've got a television host that got fired whose job was to tell people they're fired as our president. So we'll see.
I should like this guy. We should like this guy.
Correct. We're absolutely correct.
I've got bullshit fake teeth and weird
hair. I got four of them, and I have to color my crown because it turns gray. Just the crown. It's really weird.
We should like this guy. Like,
I know.
He should be the guy. Hey, if he can do it, we can do it. We're thinking how unqualified we would be to run a country and going.
Same though. I mean, but I would surround myself with people of that I didn't tell them what medicine was. You know, I'm not equipped to tell a scientist, but he wants to be in charge of all these things, and the humor just gets sucked right out when you just have a bunch of cronies that can't say no to you or you get fired. I mean, you don't even have... What's going on with Boris there? How's that going?
The Boris thing is... I think it's an almost impossible situation to get right. I liked what they did in Sweden. I liked the fact that they said they went for herd immunity. They relied on people's common sense. They said if you have a pre-existing condition or you're over a certain age, you have to stay in. Everyone else, business as usual. And people that are going to get it, they might as well get it soon. But they had a great healthcare system up and running from the get-go. They got one of the best healthcare systems in the world. So they felt like they would be able to deal with it. And that was the initial plan here. And the press in the UK just went, no, we need to shut down. And so they shut down because it's never a good look for a politician to have you know, 50,000 people die, and there was no way of there was no way to avoid that. So I think they did kind of. I don't know whether it would, if another party had got in, I don't know whether it would be a vastly different number. If anyone could have done any one thing that you would have gone, that of course. Like everyone's going to say, of course, in 5 years' time, when we know what we should have done. But we're in the middle of it. It's kind of, it feels very fog of war at the moment.
Yes.
It feels like that kind of...
If you were able to do a socially distant comedy tour of sorts, or a few dates here or there, do you think you would do what I probably would do, which is pay homage to where we are at the moment? And would you have all of your quarantine and COVID material? I don't think you would go as political, because that's not you, correct?
I was mid-tour, so I would do quite a lot of stuff on politics at the moment, quite a lot of stuff on COVID. I think there's a real appetite for people to talk about this stuff.
Right.
For the debate. Because you go, the TV news, TV shows, they're left or they're right, and you're in that echo chamber. And I think that idea of, like, people like debate. People like to have their minds changed. And often humor is a way to kind of sugar the pill. And you're trying to make sense of what's happened. And it strikes me that comedy is very good at kind of going, look, we've all had a terrible year. Let's talk about it. It makes it easier. It's a catharsis.
It is. It really is. I was about to... I was on tour. I had to cancel Canada and the day before, much like you recently had to do, and they were mad at me in Vancouver. They were like,
the guilt.
I didn't want to cancel it. So I mean, I waited till the last day, and then they said, no, you have to come, because they didn't know it was really coming, what was really happening. Nor did I. But I heard from Showbiz intel that it's really going to happen and they're going to shut stuff down. I went, really? And so I canceled Vancouver. I was supposed to go to Calgary. And then if I had gone to Vancouver, I would have had one show and then all of Canada. I would have stayed there for another month because I wouldn't have been able to get out, because they closed all of the venues that I would have played.
Stay for the healthcare.
That's a good point. And they're very, yeah, very kind.
Oh, I wonder, is that the other thing that will happen in America? Like, COVID happens, it's awful, and lives are lost. What's the good that comes from this? Does something happen with the American healthcare system?
There's a lot of people that wanted Obamacare removed, and now they've been trying to change it, and a lot of people don't have healthcare now. So the whole world has pre-existing conditions. There isn't anyone without them.
No, it does seem that, yeah, everyone's got a pre-existing condition. Everyone needs looking after. And that seems like is America still the richest country in the world? I think it is, isn't it?
I don't know. Isn't it Dubai? I don't know.
I mean, come on. But you know, it's the...
North Korea's pays a lot of extras. They've got a lot of, you know, a lot of atmosphere people, a lot of extras. They really, looks great. You know,
America's, you're doing great. I think you might be able to throw down for a couple more nurses and a few ventilators.
Oh, we are guilty as shit in not taking care of our frontline workers and hospitals, and where are the ventilators? And people have been going, well, that's all crap. You know, the equipment was fine. It wasn't. It hasn't been. It's still not, because we're still in phase one. What would you guys, you're like in phase two right now, or still in first wave?
No, we're reopening very slowly now. And it seems to be going. We reopened the bars about 2 weeks ago. And today, 2 weeks ago. And it's gone okay. We haven't had a massive resurgence in the virus as a result of that. So it feels like we locked down at the right time. We flattened the curve. It feels like they did okay. I think it's very difficult to tell, though, because it's really, this is so unprecedented. I feel like giving the politicians a hard time. You kind of go, well, they're doing their best. I don't know. Who would want that job?
I think there must be a few heroes out there somewhere that are going to come out of this that we haven't met yet. Because
you would think, and you know, ultimately someone in a lab somewhere. Remember when Big Pharma were the bad guys? It was about 4 months ago.
Yeah, well, for mental health, Big Pharma often is the bad guy where they go, hey, here's our newest pill that'll stop you from being schizophrenic or bipolar. And it turns out a lot of people aren't helped by it. And then they guinea pig people. So Big Pharma, it's the psychiatrists that are administering. It's a guinea pig situation. You can't just look at someone and go, this pill's got the magic bullet. For some people, the very fortunate, it does work. But I've had a lot of that in my family, problems with mental health.
No, there's an awful lot of that. It doesn't seem to be having the effect that they would want. It's like you talk to people that have been on antidepressants for 10 years and they're still depressed. And you go, well, I'm not sure what you're doing then. But, you know, is that worth noting? We are not medical professionals. But I'm saying Big Pharma, someone is going to come up with a magic pill that you take one of these and you can't get COVID-19 or 20 through 21, whatever the hell it is. So there's going to be some hero that becomes a trillionaire off the back of that and saves everyone. That'd be kind of great. That'll be something.
That's what I am thinking positive. I am thinking that it's, and I have to, and we have to. And I, to be able to go out in a world that has been inoculated, that there is a vaccine that works, but now they're saying even if there is, it'll come back. And but we don't know that. We don't know what the vaccine even will be.
Well, yeah, I don't think it'll be the vaccine. I think in the short term, it'll be the treatment protocol, but someone will come up with something that you go, we don't need ventilators anymore. It's a nasty case of flu. So we bang this thing back. But, you know, the world will return. This is going to pass. It's going to take some time. And what are you going to do with that time has been the question. Because I think for a lot of people, it's like, it's not just that they've not been working for a month. They're sort of sitting down and thinking about their life and what they want to do and how they want to do it and maybe changing things up a little bit. It could be, I'm hoping it's going to be good for a lot of people.
I think virtual strip clubs is the way to go.
I don't know if you've you visited the pornography. It's what I call the internet, but it's fabulous. They really have that covered.
Oh, really?
I recently, actually, in the lockdown, I finished Pornhub.
You finished it? That's so fantastic!
Yeah, you put your initials in at the end, and it just comes up on the screen. It says rehydrate.
Does it say Jimmy designed especially for you? Do they call you out?
Well done, sir. Well done.
Do you have a playlist?
that's a weird thing on the pornography while we're talking about it. No one ever talks about the pornography. But you can recommend things. I always wonder who's leaving a comment. I was watching a young lady and she was doing a terrific job. A terrific job, my friend.
God bless her.
I can't even pat my head and rub my stomach at the same time. She was, working. She was incredibly busy and doing a great job in high heels. And people had left derisory comments underneath. You think, what more could she do?
I think the comment you don't want to read is, or have to be the one to write it in capitals, is, honey, please come home.
Oh, yeah. Or, should have gone to college.
We're going to take one more quick break. This will be the last break, and it'll feel good. All right, break's over. I can't wait to be able to see you again and be able to...
It's a nice thing. I find there's something about, the kind of cancel culture that's kind of around at the moment where I feel like people are very empathetic. People are incredibly kind and understanding in person. I feel over the internet, people are kind of dicks.
Yeah.
There's something about it's not really you when it's over the internet. It's not on the email or the Twitter or Instagram. It's not really you. It's an approximation maybe, but you go, people are very understanding and very nice and they really get things when you're in the room with them. And there's something about being in the room with a comic where it's just wonderful. Like that backstage feel, the first night back at the Comedy Store in LA is going to be unbelievable.
All rooms will be open. I might even be there unless I'm out on tour. I mean, my tour is just sitting and ready to go. I'm sure yours is as well. And it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reschedule upon a reschedule upon a reschedule. Cause you kind of go, well, it's going to be, is it going to be September? Is it going to be January? Is it going to be March next year? And what's going to be left, if without government support, what theaters are going to be left?
I know many are closing, and some are from the early 1900s, you know. So all I care about is that you stay well. And I know you will, because you care about yourself more than almost anyone on the earth.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
And that is that's giving back. And I just think the world of you, and people should check out comedy. Say again, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, anyone listening to this, I hope you're all doing all right. It's such a weird time for everyone. But I was saying that there's a lovely line about comedians. The Alan Havey told me this.
Like
he said,
Alan.
"We're you know, Alan, wonderful man, a wonderful guy." He said, "We're out for ourselves, but in it together."
Yeah.
And I think there's something about this time that it feels like everyone is okay. What am I going to do in COVID-19? How am I going to make next year work? What's going to happen? We're all out for ourselves, fine, but we are in it together. There's been a shared experience it's not a war. Not the same as that at all, but it's not nothing either. I think this might just make people, might bring people together a little bit. You never know.
I'm feeling that this conversation we wouldn't be having this conversation. We'd be doing snarky little comments back and forth if it wasn't for the reality that is so serious.
This was a little bit deeper than I thought it was going to be.
I've heard you say that before, but.
Give your wife my regards.
I know what you mean by that. And she gives you hers, by the way. She adores you, but not as much as I do. Be well and lots of love, Jimmy.
Take care, my friend. All right, take care.
Bye-bye. Jimmy Carr. I love Jimmy Carr. That was Jimmy Carr. If you're one of the few people that doesn't know his comedy around the world of English-speaking people, or he's great with subtitles, check him out on Netflix. Check him out on his Jimmy Carr sites on Instagram and Twitter. He is one of the smartest. He's got television shows constantly. I'm sure some of them will go back into production as things get safer. I just can't thank you guys enough. Do what you normally do with this. You want to subscribe or follow or whatever, and you rate and review it and give a nice comment. Or, you know, because I would do that for you. I'm sorry it was so serious, but that's kind of where we're at. And comedians, oddly enough, can be pretty serious with each other, especially at times like we're going through, which you never have gone through. So it's a serious time, and yet I'm going to keep trying to put levity into it where I can. Sending you guys all of my best. Be safe. Okay. Lots of love. I ain't just saying that either. And it's not like thoughts and prayers from a Hallmark card. I'm sending you guys lots of love. All right. See you next time on, I'm going to say it. Bob Saget's here for you.